I mean, this is a sport that's on the precipice of irrelevance.
The games are taking over 3.5 hours. Playoff games are taking over 4 hours.
Game's too long, too slow. Who cares?
This is a situation where baseball's in trouble to begin with.
I hate to break it to you. Baseball's dead.
Baseball is dead.
Rest in peace.
There's definitely a delay. Hey, we're gonna battle through. We're going through a fucking storm right here on the northeast. The wind is whipping. Yeah, we got we have opening day in 5 days, and there's snow on the ground here in Boston.
Nice,
but
that's
baseball for you. Yeah, that's baseball for you. Dallas, your Oakland A's can't seem to stay out of the news, it appears. For a team that has a very small market, for a team that is drawing very small numbers at the ballpark, you guys seem to be gathering quite the headlines here to start the season. Is there anything you want to say before I get into this first headline?
No, I don't know what your first headline. I don't know what you're getting into. No.
Do you know who do you know who Dave Carmichael is?
Carmichael Dave? You're calling him Dave Carmichael. That is his name.
Okay.
In Sacramento, in Northern California, he is known as Carmichael Dave.
That's his Twitter. I was confused, like, why it was Carmichael Dave, but his name is Dave Carmichael.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, here's the headline if you're unaware. Okay. The Oakland A's and Sacramento are finalizing an agreement to play temporarily in the capital city beginning next season. There will likely be an official announcement as soon as tomorrow, which is today, or Friday. This story is developing. Dallas, what can you tell us about the Oakland A's moving to Sacramento before? I'm assuming that they're going from Oakland to Sacramento, Sacramento to Vegas is the plan?
Jared, I wish I could answer those questions for you, man. I know as much about this stuff as any one of us sitting right here right now. You know, whether I'm privy to rumblings, like I think a lot of people in the area might be, that doesn't put any of us, you know, in those rooms, you know, and I hate that that's always my default answer, but it's always the answer. And it's always the only answer that I have is I can appreciate that people might think that I am a little more important to this process than I really am. I'm just a broadcaster. I'm just a dude from the area who might have an ear to the street, but at the end of the day, that's all I am. I'm nobody that is influencing a decision. I'm nobody that can influence a decision. So I'm not a, you know, innocent bystander per se. I'm a part of this machine. I'm a part of how this is going right now. And I don't have an impact. Wish I could. I don't have answers that I wish I could give people to help clarify the situation. I'm just not in that position. So when I hear stuff like this, my mentality always has to be the same, is I know what my responsibility is. I know what my job is, and that's to call baseball games. And if I'm the person that you're looking to for these answers, and if I can't give them to you, I'm the one you want to get mad at for that, then you know what? Fire your arrows. You know, it's all good. I understand what it's like to have misguided hate and misguided anger. I had a lot of that with me when I was a little fella. And I realized that life gets a little easier when you figure out how to channel that energy. So I know what A's fans have been going through for a long time right now, and it's tough. It is undoubtedly the toughest era, I think, in our franchise's history. And all I ever want to do is be able to communicate and give some sort of hope to our fans, whether that's us knowing where we're going to play for the next 100 years, or that's us kind of in our situation right now where we're not really sure what's going on. But I think you can understand that anytime a sports franchise or a company starts to go through something like this, that people that are, you know, in its orbit are going to feel a certain way about it. And that's why I think you continue to hear what we hear and continue to see the focus on this, is because it's a big deal. And that ball is starting to roll, I think, a little quicker now. And folks are realizing that.
this may be a dumb question. I'm just unfamiliar, but is there already a ballpark that exists in Sacramento? Like, are they taking over like a AAA stadium, or are they, like, what's the deal?
So it's where the Sacramento River Cats play. It was called Rayleigh Field. I don't know if it's still called Rayleigh Field. It was Rayleigh Field when I was playing there, and the River Cats were an affiliate of the Oakland A's. The River Cats are now an affiliate of the San Francisco Giants. I can imagine, or just as we talk through this, that's what that would look like, is when the AAA affiliate is on the road, I can assume that's when the A's would be playing in that stadium. And remember, minor league schedules are worked out where it's 7 days in a place. You play a team for 7 days, and then you have Monday off, and then you go to the next city. So scheduling and logistics in that regard are things that I have no idea if those have been worked out. I can't answer any of that. But what I can answer is, yeah, there is a ballpark, and it is a beautiful ballpark in downtown Sacramento. And I'm not calling it PNC by any means, but there are shots of the skyline and the bridges and stuff, you know, just beyond center field and right center field. And so do they have the means to accommodate baseball there? Absolutely. It's a beautiful AAA stadium. And then that's where the conversation gets into, well, is it ready to accommodate Major League Baseball? And you know what? Those are questions for people who get paid a lot more money than I do to answer those questions. I don't know. I don't know what they've, you know, I have no idea.
So some quick research here. Rayleigh Field stopped being called Rayleigh Field after the 2019 season. It is now called Sutter Health Park. It's the home of the Sutter Health Park. Sacramento River Cats minor league baseball team plays there. It was Rayleigh Field from 2000 to 2019.
A lot of banners hanging in that ballpark for the green and gold River Kitties, baby.
Yeah. So the capacity, 10,624 fixed seats, but it can fit about 14,000 total when you include the fixed seats, the lawn, and standing room. The dimensions, 330 feet to left, 403 to center, 325 to right, and it is 58 feet to the backstop. So that is going to apparently be the new home of the Oakland, Sacramento, Las Vegas Athletics, formerly of Philadelphia.
Yeah, playing there and having lived, this is the thing. This is what's tough about this. You know, I've kind of outlined this before, and we don't need to spend a whole lot of time on this. I understand it's a big deal, and maybe I'm just kind of like trying to avoid facing this. But I grew up and I had the craziest ride through professional baseball. I grew up in Stockton, California, 40 minutes from Sacramento. I went to junior college in Sacramento. I played A ball in Stockton, my hometown. I played double A an hour away from where I went to the university at Texas Tech. I played triple A in Sacramento, where I lived when I went to junior college. And then I played the big leagues in Oakland, 45 minutes away from Stockton and Sacramento. I have legitimately lived at home and played baseball in this region my entire fucking life, from the time I was a child pissing on myself to the time I was an adult still trying not to piss on myself. I've played it the entire time there. This region and this baseball is all I know. And so I understand all of the mixed emotion, every bit of it, every bit of it. That's what I try to convey to people, is I was the kid who grew up a fan of baseball in this area. And then I was the kid who became lucky enough to play for these teams in this area. And then I was the player who got lucky enough to become the broadcaster for this team. So when you ask where my heart is and you ask how I feel about this, I'm not angry that it might need some explanation for folks. I just ask folks that once I explain it to you, to not just take that at face value and move on, but think about what that might feel like for somebody who isn't just kind of dropping in on this. Jared, you said it the other day. You want to talk about born in the flame and baptized in the fire? Baseball in this region and its fans are what have raised me and what has made me.
Yeah, because I mean, like, there's definitely, I mean, you're a very rare case because there are plenty of notable, legendary names that are associated with or affiliated with major league organizations that just like aren't from the area. You know, like it's like, you know, like a lot of like the baseball hotbeds are Florida, Georgia, Texas, California. And then you might become like the face of like a Midwest team. And it's like, well, I mean, like Albert Pujols, perfect example. It's like he didn't grow up in St. Louis. Yeah. So I got to tell you that right now. So for you to be born and raised in that area and have the baseball journey that you've had, because I mean, like, listen, I sympathize with you a great deal because for me, it's much less for me. Like I was born and raised in Boston and then, you know, we've been fortunate enough to become essentially the voices of Boston Red Sox baseball from a media standpoint. So when ownership doesn't care and it feels like, you know, the team has given up on the fans, like I'm the one that has to fucking like hear from the fans about it. Like the owners aren't going out there and taking questions and like they're not the ones that are active on social media getting all the tweets. So when I see you in your position and you know, you could tweet about your dogs and the replies are going to be like, what the fuck are the A's doing? Like, this is an embarrassment. Like, you know, you fucking bootlicker, like you're on the side of the A's. And it's like, can you stop for a second and take into consideration that Dallas, what do you want the guy to do? Like he was born there, played for all the teams there, including the A's. And now he's the broadcaster for the A's. He's trying to live his dream. He's not the fucking, you know, frequently asked questions complaint box. Like that's not what he's trying to do. He's just trying to do his job. So I see it and it annoys me, but I think that you've done a commendable job of compartmentalizing that because I think it's a gift and a curse that you are so accessible to the fans in Oakland. And I think a vast majority of them recognize your position. And they're like, you know, Dallas is one of us. He just happens to be the broadcaster and he gets a check from the team. But we all saw you at the reverse boycott tailgate that they did. Like you were out there with the fans, like you're one of them too. So it's I fully recognize and appreciate the shitty position that you are in because of how you came up, but also the job that you have. Like it's a tough spot to be in. So hang with them, Dallas. It's hopefully there's brighter pastures in your future.
Yeah. All I can do is show up and again, and this is, I was going to make a video about this and this is what I'll say, cause I've seen it at the ballpark and I see it happen. And I just want to say this and we can move on for the fans who are going to endure what is coming and are trying to figure out a way to make sense of it all. If you're the fan who is completely done, throws their hands up and is, I need you to know that I understand. And I need you to know that I feel every ounce of your pain. I promise I do. I promise I do. And if you're also the fan who says, you know what? All of that be damned. I'm not going to let the last opportunity to enjoy this place and the memories that it's given me, I'm not going to let that slip by. I understand and I appreciate where you are coming from. And I know where you are coming from. And when those two fans find themselves next to each other at a ball game at some point in time, I want them both to remember and I want them both to look around and just think to themselves that somebody in this ballpark right now could very well be taking in baseball in this place for the first time. And yeah, it very well may be their last time as well. But can you remember what your first time was like? There's a good chance that that memory is what got you to come back or is maybe what led to you just following up, keeping up. So remember that when you're voicing your displeasure and you're sharing your emotion justifiably so and understandably so, remember that growing the game is ultimately what we're here to do. And just take stock of where you're at before you fire those arrows, and make sure that the folks around you are something that you're thinking about.
There's no real segue into the next topic. We're kind of just going to do a hard pivot here. The update that we got on Justin Verlander, if you're an Astros fan, came from Brian McTaggart. He says Justin Verlander will make a rehab start in Sunday's AAA game at Sugarland. He'll throw 70 to 75 pitches and will need one additional start before rejoining the team. What is he now? 42, 43? Like, what are our expectations for Justin Verlander? He's 41, but I'm sure he'll turn 43.
We'll probably 42. Turn 42, but I think before.
Oh, he just turned 41. Okay, he turned 41 in February. Oh. All right, so this is age 41 season. What are our expectations for Justin Verlander upon his return?
Is it fair to look at Justin Verlander through a similar lens that you might start or have potentially viewed Clayton Kershaw through the past few seasons? Maybe five or so? Do you think Justin Verlander has that kind of shelf life working through some of the injuries that we've seen Kershaw work through, like with the back and stuff, you know, like, yeah, probably not going to see him until June or so. And it's kind of been that way where, you know, you're going to get spurts of him. Is there a world where Justin Verlander exists like that? I don't know that there's a world where he wants to exist like that. I think he's either, look, I can strap it on and I can go, or I fucking can't. But the idea of fiddling around and trying to piecemeal a season together just doesn't strike me as something that Justin Verlander is terribly interested in. If he can go and he can lay his nuts out there for you, that's what he's going to do. And he will do everything he can to get back to being able to do that for you. But if it gets to a point where he's sort of holding the effort to move forward hostage, kind of like I talked about DeGrom last year and how the Texas Rangers, the best thing they could have done was made peace with the fact that he gone as soon as possible, and they can start to work towards their future. Well, I think that benefited them because they weren't held hostage by what DeGrom was going to be, when he was going to be that, and Scherzer. And they said, fuck it, here we go. Let's make our moves and let's go do what we need to do. So does Justin Verlander allow himself to go through that? Does he allow the team to deal with that? My answer is no. I don't think that that's what's in the future.
Well, my expectations for Verlander are much higher than they are for Kershaw. Just because, like, I understand that there's an injury history for both, but I think that Kershaw's is far more lengthy and complicated. When you look at a guy like Verlander, it's like, yeah, like he got clipped. He started this season with an injury as well. But for whatever injuries Verlander has run into the last 2-3 years here, I still, despite being 41 years old, look at him as a far more durable option than someone like Clayton Kershaw, who I think when he returns, like whatever you get from Kershaw this year to me is a bonus, whereas whatever I get from Verlander this year is expected. I think that's the difference for me.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, the reason you view that Verlander that way is because that's what it is. Like Verlander through more innings last season than Kershaw has thrown in a season since 2019. So that you, and you brought up, he got clipped. What happened when he came back? He won the Cy Young.
Well, yeah.
And he had a sub-2 ERA, and he had a sub-2. So like, I'm not putting a limit on my expectations in a sense. Like, I think it's reasonable to say that era is behind us, both because of age and additional injury and the fact that we have seen two seasons since winning that award. And he's been a different, diminished version, albeit still extremely effective with an ERA in the low threes. What I'm most interested to see is what level his strikeout rate and swing and miss rate is ultimately when he reestablishes himself this season, because for as like effective as he was in last season, the first season after winning the Cy Young, like his strikeout rate was down considerably, and it was already down in his Cy Young season from his peak level. just to put some numbers to it, like his strikeout rate last season was 21.5%, which was his lowest in a single season since 2015. And nothing like the peak Verlander that we had gotten to know. So we've talked about it before. Dallas has gone in depth. Like, you know, it's weird to say that Verlander needs to find kind of like a new level at age 40, in his age 41 season, like we talked about Felix Hernandez doing when he was like 31. But that's almost what you're talking about here, is a guy with diminished velocity, diminished swing and miss. But a guy who has an incredibly long track record of succeeding, and even succeeding with diminished stuff.
Well, and think about the evolution that Clayton Kershaw went through, right? Not the discovery, but the creation of a slider. Like, I'll never forget AJ Ellis talking about, like, the day that Kershaw was like, I think we're going to throw a slider. And AJ Ellis was like, he decided to throw a slider, and it just became like the second or third best slider in baseball when he decided to throw it. And that's just him evolving. And we don't look at Justin Verlander as somebody who, like, when you throw out his name in the Cy Young conversation, you don't get stared at like you have three heads. But if you were to do that with Clayton Kershaw, people would go, you have him in the Cy? So you're saying, because we would automatically go to, you think he's going to finish the season healthy? You think he's making 30 starts? You think? And the answer to that is no. But I think Verlander, to your point, Jay Hay, is somebody who we still look at and say, if this dude is healthy, like if he's back, that's a viable option. That's still a horse. That is still a horse that you can pick. Still a horse that you can ride. So it'd be interesting to see how, just working at a couple ticks down, if that is where he's at, how that affects him and how that affects how he attacks, because he has been so dominant for so long because of his ability to either pitch to the contact when necessary, but ultimately it's his ability to say, fuck you, you're done, I'm going to wipe you out myself. And if he doesn't have that, he's got to figure out how to get outs a little differently.
And the other thing is team context too. I think the Astros are past the point where they need or even are expecting Justin Verlander to be the best pitcher on the team. There may be stretches where that's the case. I'm not ruling out that there is a postseason series where that's the case, but I think Framber Valdez has ascended to a point where he is the ace of the staff. That is the expectation for him. He would start the a postseason series, et cetera, et cetera. And I think there's a lot of reason to be encouraged from some of the stuff that you've seen from the rest of the rotation. Obviously we talked about Ronel Blanco. You're obviously very encouraged by a no hitter, but like Christian Javier stuff plus, I saw yesterday, top five in the league, I believe, so far, among people who have made at least one start. So, Jared asked what's the expectation. I think that he's no longer the ace of this team is okay to have as the expectation.
How many starts does Verlander need to make this year to be considered a success? Like, where's the line for disappointment? How many starts does he make that where you're like, this is satisfactory versus that was a disappointing season?
Well, I think you have to add some context. Like, what do those starts look like? Because if it's a matter of just making sure that he's healthy and you only get 15 of those, but they all come consecutively and they come at the end, then what are we doing? Are we knocking him because it took a little while to make sure that he was able to nail down 15 in a row? Or would you have him come back for five and then hit the shelf for another month and then give you those 10 to 12 and then go, oh, well, that's much better. You know, what are you looking for here? So for me,
two more starts, though, if we're talking 70 to 75 pitches this weekend on Sunday, and then
we're talking 20 to 25 potentially. Yeah. So that's why I think I am going to put it at, I would say I'm going to say 18 to 22 starts, just to not give you the 15 to 20 round number. I'll give you 18 to 22 starts is something that I would be. Yeah. I expect that from Verlander.
Yeah. Cause I think if you say 20 plus, then you're also building in a hiccup along the way somewhere.
Yeah, well, and that's why I'm thinking, you know what? Maybe he gets ready to ramp, and for whatever reason, shut down. Let's wait another week, whatever.
Damn. I really do think the timing of the starts is the most important thing that you guys were saying, though, because I think the Astros have ascended to a place where it's seven straight seasons in the ALCS. It's ALCS or bust. It's championship or bust. If Verlander's delivering, you know, impact starts in September and October and the rest of the season was shaky, I think that's still a world where that's a success too.
Well, fair. They're going to need Justin Verlander to chase down the first place Halos, period.
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't had a max check-in under the new iteration of Baseball is Dead. We haven't had a max call yet. I'm saving it. Like, it's got to be, It's got to be important. Jay, hey, does Anthony Rendon have a hit yet?
No.
Okay, I'm just asking. You know, it's, what is it? Adolis Garcia has hit 29 home runs since Anthony Rendon has gotten a hit.
Yeah, people like that one. Yeah, 29 homers since Rendon's last hit.
Wow. That's quite the stat.
Yeah, thanks.
You guys are fucked.
I was pretty happy with myself there.
Yeah.
Bryant got off the schneid yesterday, though.
Yeah, what was he? Chris started, Bryant. What, 0 for 19 or something like that?
He was 0 for 18, I believe. Oh, maybe he got to 0 for 19, but I know he was 0 for 18 with 10 strikeouts at one point.
I was just going to say, getting doors absolutely blown.
Yeah.
Just blown.
Yeah.
Well, that 0 for 19, was that dated back to last September? No, that's just this year. Because I think he finished last year on a hitless streak as well.
Oh, yeah, that may be true. I know I went back and looked at like his September as a whole, and okay. I know that from September through the point before he got a hit yesterday, he had a sub 450 OPS and was hitting 120. Since the start of last September with a strikeout rate approaching 40%. So real bad spot.
I want to ask you guys a random question, just completely random. If you are making a push to October, would you rather be reliant upon a starting pitcher coming back from injury and hoping that how he returns and how he rounds out and finishes the season is what helps you get you to where you need to be, and that's what you're relying upon, this arm? Or would you rather be in a situation where you're relying upon an offensive piece to come back and
pitcher.
We get this dude back and we make a run and I feel good about it? What situation would you rather be in? Would you rather be, you know, married to the arm that's going to get you there? Or would you rather be, you know, married to the position guy, to the bat that's going to get you there? Who do you want to depend on to get you to October, an arm or a bat?
Arm. And I think if we're talking specifically coming back in the postseason itself versus like a stretch run in September, I'm going with the arm.
Well, no, I want the stretch run. I want the stretch run. Give me the stretch run, because we got to get there. Because it's easy to say, give me the dude who can take the ball six times or whatever through the postseason. Like, it's, you can find that guy, but
yeah, that's a little bit more complicated. Because like I'm looking at it as like in the postseason, some of the best hitters in the game that are fully healthy will hit like 217 with a fucking 689 OPS in the postseason, and you'll take that because the OPS is only that high because they hit one home run and it was in a big spot and that won you a playoff game. Whereas I feel like guys are more apt to join a postseason rotation and be able to give you a random six innings, two earned runs, and that'll win you a ball game too. But if it's for a stretch run, I might lean position player. I guess it also depends on the guy. Like, does this guy play good defense? Because that can help
well,
us.
Well, so like it's almost like a, it's almost like that. Do you want to be the Astros? And we're not saying that this is their situation, but do you want to be the Astros, who are really relying on Justin Verlander, or could be relying on Justin Verlander down the stretch, those 18 to 22 starts, and then what he could do in the postseason? Would you rather be that team, or would you rather be a team like, let's say, the New York Yankees, who are like, look, we get Judgy and his toes back, we're unbeatable. We get Judgy and the toes back, and we're a different club. We just got Judge and his toes back. It's September. Look the fuck out. Who, like, you have to pick one of those trains to ride. Which train are you riding?
See, that's why it's interesting, is because when you start putting names on it, like I was leaning position player for the scenario, but then you put names on it. Now I am leaning pitcher. Like in that specific scenario, if it's the month of September Would I rather get Verlander back for September and October, or would I rather get Judge back off the toe injury September, October? I'd rather have Verlander back. Judge, like, not a notorious postseason performer. I mean, dude hit 62 home runs and then disappeared in that postseason. And
take
I'll
away,
give
take
him
away
that
the personal product. The personal productivity is what it is. Like, but I mean, just that kind of player. You know what I mean? That kind of player. That's what I'm, Jay, hey, what do you got? Because I could give you, who do you, I don't know, let's put it in Jay Hay terms. Let's say that you had a choice. It was either Kluber in peak Kluber, who was going to come back because for whatever reason he wasn't healthy.
So this was 2016. He did that. He came back for the playoffs in 16.
Or Jose Ramirez.
I don't know if this is backed up by anything, so I'm just going to go off the cuff here, but I feel like I'd rather be relying on the pitcher, because it feels like if you've established on the side situation or in the minor league ramp up or whatever, that your stuff is playing right at levels that you are comfortable with and have established previously, then that can just kind of like, you're not always going to get the result, of course, because it's baseball. But that can just kind of like be plugged into the rotation. It's like, okay, his stuff's back. It's the guy, whatever. From the hitting side, it feels like there would be more of a timing issue that would be in play, or like a, I'm coming back midstream and it may be difficult to hit the ground running. I don't know if that's backed up by like data or whatever, but that would be kind of the pitcher feels like a more, like you can isolate more of the variables and just be comfortable with like where you're plugging that person in terms of what you're going to get from them moving forward. I don't know. That's my off the cuff.
Yeah, no. And I would ride pitcher just because that guy in the offensive side of things can be worked around, and there's no not facing the pitcher who's shoving it up your ass. 'Cause that pitcher could pitch around whichever hitter you've identified as the guy that you want to ride through September into October.
Can we go back to the Brian thing just real fast? Oh, God, what's the breaking news?
It's official. Statement's out, Dallas.
Oh, boy.
This comes in from Evan Drellick. The A's are moving to Sacramento from 2025 until 2027 with an option to play there for a fourth year, according to an announcement. They're planning to be done in Oakland after this season. They're 57th in the city. It's official. Is it one of those things where like you knew it was coming, but it still sucks to hear it officially? Yeah. Yeah. I can see how that would be. I mean, we've known this for a while now, but this is in writing, official statement. Evan Drellick's got it. I feel like it's been a long series of just shit events for A's fans. Is this kind of like the can it get worse for A's fans, or is this the final blow? Like I don't know what they could hear or be dealt after this that could be like, this is kind of like, is this the final blow in your opinion, Dallas?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of feels that way. I will always try to maintain the until there's a shovel in the ground approach. Because that's really, I think, the only thing that you can kind of lean on. You know, until there's a building to walk into, that ultimately I think is what fans have left to hold on to. You know, and Jared, as a baseball player, man, you spend a lot of time lying to yourself about how good you are realizing how good you're not, just because that's part of how you got to get up and compete and go about things every day. Cause you're at the top of the, you're at the top of the mountain, man. You're in a world full of alphas, and every day is not always whipped cream nuts and a cherry waiting for you. You know, sometimes you got to lie to yourself and tell you that that is what's waiting for you, even though it's inevitable failure. That's what this game is built on. It is built and designed to rip your fucking heart out. And just in the moment where you feel like it's a warm blanket ready to be laid over you, sometimes that's just not the case. Yeah, that's 105 in the ribs.
Yep. Multi-layered question here, Dallas, but what does this mean for you? And if you don't know the answer to that, is part of that your decision, or is part of that out of your hands, or both?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I mean, I can be, being completely and totally honest, is I haven't had any communication. So I show up to the ballpark for the fans. I show up to the ballpark for my family. I show up to the ballpark for folks in this organization who have been there since I showed up day one, 2004, as a kid who had no idea what I was getting myself into in the world of professional baseball. And those people are still in place in this organization. And, you know, that's where my heart is, man. That's where a lot of my emotion is channeled. That's what gets me up in the morning. And I think somehow, some way, still gets me excited to want to talk about and to want to bring to the fans that just that small window of time where we can kind of escape our realities. Unfortunately, it feels like that those walls of our reality are closing in, and feels like some of the windows that we try to create to look out are being covered up. And that's tough, man.
Jay Hay, for those who don't understand why this is happening, you have no official ties to the Oakland A's. Could you put into words, in your opinion, why this is happening? Why are the A's moving to Sacramento?
I mean, if you want to be super reductive about it, it's so that one man can leverage his asset and investment in a way that makes him, you know, as wealthy as his situation allows for, or marginally more wealthy than he already is. Like, there's plenty of literature. There are plenty of people who have invested an enormous amount of research in this topic that I could point people to if you hit me up on Twitter or whatever. But like, there's no demographic argument for taking a team from the Bay Area and moving them to Las Vegas, Nevada. And that is only more true when it requires a stop at a substandard or a sub major league facility for 3 to 4 years before you even get the opportunity to play in a much smaller market than you originally left, just because you've fractured the relationship with the local community to such a degree, and kind of decided this was what you wanted to do, regardless of what was put forth. So, I think it's a baseball tragedy. I feel really badly for Dallas. I feel really silly transitioning into any of the other topics that I had certainly planned on talking about in this podcast, now that we got this news live on the air. But yeah, my above and beyond the logistics that don't make sense to fans of the team and don't make sense to people who follow Major League Baseball. It's just my heart goes out to the people who have invested their time and energy and love into the product and the team.
Well said. It is. I was going to ask. It doesn't even really make sense from like a historical perspective, you know, like 20, 30 years from now, how will history remember the relocation of the Oakland A's? But I don't even think you have to wait that long to look back and assess it. Like, we can see it in real time that this is a unnecessary farce that is motivated by nothing other than greed. And I don't even know what the other adjective would be. I mean, it's cold, you know, like, I mean, it's doing something that, like Dallas put it, it's, you know, it's not an isolated situation with just him. Like, it's something that's ripping the hearts out of fans for the purpose of either maintaining a level of wealth or a marginal increase of wealth.
I know I in particular get hit on in this podcast for being like negative or very critical more often than I'm positive, but like this is the reason for cynicism. If you're deeply, deeply invested in baseball, as everybody on this screen and involved in this podcast is, like, this sucks. And, you know, I have family experience as it relates to the Cleveland Browns relocating to Baltimore and Art Modell taking the team and ripping the team out of the city. And that impacted people that I'm close to. And I know, like, that, like, they have never reinvested themselves in that sport and that, you know, situation in the same way that they were before that happened. So I know, as Dallas has said many times, it's a different experience for every different fan, and how they choose to react is totally appropriate, pretty much regardless of what that reaction is. But, you know, I think a lot of the reporting has said that, you know, kind of off the record reporting has said that even fellow owners are and the league are not necessarily pleased about this situation. I know it received unanimous approval. That's just a stamp at that point. That's worked out behind the scenes. Everybody wanted Las Vegas as an expansion franchise location because that gets everyone much more wealthy than relocating an existing team to that market. And this is happening because of John Fisher basically just shoehorning this team and this situation into that, because the current relationship and the current existence had been so badly damaged, mostly from the team side. So it's, you know, this isn't some team with no history in the area. This isn't some, you know, this isn't some team that has been rudderless for decades. We've talked about it before. This is a team where you don't have to go back very far at all to see an enormous amount of tangible in the stadium fan support on a regular basis. And obviously there is a team in the National Basketball Association that has made existing in the Bay Area a money printing machine. So with all due respect to any shade that's thrown at Oakland or the Bay Area, and it's like, that's why they're leaving or whatever. Like, what are we really talking about here? We're talking about a mismanaged operation from the team and ownership side. And that's why their financial situation is what it is, not because the Bay Area or Oakland can't support a viable, thriving baseball team and community, because they have and could again.
And literally that basketball team that you're talking about is quite literally next door to the Coliseum. Like, you can,
yeah, like, you can, I see, I know, it they from just the, yeah, line. Yeah, I it's whatever, it's you could go, we could literally do hours on why this situation makes no sense or sucks from a personal fan perspective or a neutral baseball fan perspective, but it is clearly moving forward, apparently, to according to the reporting. And
I just want to say this, because I got to be honest, man, it's been really hard for me to sit here and just listen to you guys talk about this. A's fans, if you're listening to this, my DMs are open. I could show you a long list of fans who have reached out that I give my phone number to, because if you just want to talk, you just want to yell, I'll be the dude that you can yell at. I'll be the dude that you can talk to. Because it'll probably fucking help me too. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's all I got.